Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel and to the roundtable. It is a delight to have you with us. Joining us for our discussion this morning, WAMC's Ray Graff. Good morning, Raymond.
Hello.
WAMC's Dr. Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
How'd you do?
And University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo.
Hello.
Good morning. Hello. Thank you very much for being with us. And reminder that you can join the conversation by simply emailing us roundtable@wamc.org. We do love your mail, and we love to read it and get it and see what is on your mind. You can also comment on our Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable, at that little squiggly thing, at WAMC Roundtable, one word, and you can tweet us as well. We have many topics to discuss this morning, and we'll get right to it and begin with the Federal Reserve. I guess this was somewhat of a surprise. We were expecting one thing, we got another. It turns out that the Federal Reserve not quite ready to let go of its extra efforts to help the economy grow. All summer, Federal Reserve officials said really good things about the economy's performance, how strong it looked, how well it was recovering, how eager they were to step back and watch it walk on its own. Well, in a reversal that stunned economists, investors on Wall Street, the Fed said on Wednesday that it would postpone any retreat from its momentary stimulus campaign for at least another month, and quite possibly until next year.
Ooh.
The Fed's chairman, Ben Bernanke, emphasized the economic conditions were improving, but he said that the Fed still feared a turn for the worse. This was news that was received very well on Wall Street, with record highs at the close of the business day yesterday. I guess whenever we talk about I can't get a comment that you made, Alan, out of my mind. That you said earlier this week that the Fed chair can't sneeze without being in the news. So it seems, I think you made a comment about their nostril, actually.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway,
I don't remember.
But it was brilliant, and I thank you for it, and I remember it. My question is about what does this ultimately mean, and how much of a surprise is it? Because we've been getting a lot of conflicting reports of when we hear about the poverty rate, when we hear about the economy, when we hear about a lot of reports that have come out that indicate that things aren't as great as
I'm going to shock you with my disloyalty here.
Uh-oh. All right, go for it.
But when I get on the bike in the morning, the great bike, and watch some TV,
yeah,
I almost always find myself watching the CNBC. And they always have these guys on who are the CEOs of the biggest corporations in America. And to a one, they all said, yeah, we made a lot of money yesterday. That was good, but it wasn't good for the country. And their point is that sooner or later, it is the American citizen who have to back those bonds that are being sold back. I know you're going to be right with us, Ray.
Well, here, they're buying, what, $80 billion a year?
$85 billion a month.
Yeah.
And that sooner or later, we're going to have to wean ourselves off of this. And wean is an interesting concept.
Yeah, well, they call this the pump, or they're pumping money in. And eventually that is going to have to be shut down to some extent.
Which is so interesting, because the analogy I would make is for all of us who have been existing for years and years and years on Prilosec or one of those...
Prilosec
or one of those things.
Pump inhibitors, right.
The pump inhibitors. Try getting off one of those.
Wow, I'll tell you what.
Boy, does it hurt.
You've done the nostril reference and the pump reference. Good.
I think that Bernanke took a page out of Obama's book. He had drawn a line in the sand, and then he backed away from it. He stunned everybody. And he did it for reasons that I think, in a frustrated tone of voice, actually, if you watch his remarks, but still, with great reason, explained. We are in a time of great uncertainty, thanks to our Congress. I know we're going to talk about that later. And there's more danger to the economy. It would be very irresponsible to start tapering now.
Stimulus
needs to continue.
I also think, though, that, to some extent, he's admitting that, part of this rosy outlook is that unemployment's going down. And I think it's finally a tacit admission that, in fact, using that as a barometer is not good, because a lot of people are just stopping looking for work. And so he admits that, things might not get – they might get worse before they get better.
I do like his quote, which is, we have been over-optimistic – And the line in the sand that you refer to, Rosemary, is in June when the Fed declared that it intended to begin a retreat by the end of the year. And then, of course, that had investors immediately thinking that to demand that higher interest rates and mortgage loans and other financial products.
How much do you think is personal? I mean, in other words, Bernanke's on the way out. Yellen, we now know, is on the way in. On Bernanke's watch, it would be nice if he goes out and things are good. And at least one cynic suggested to me that this may be his own self-apple polishing.
His golden parachute for his career, his resume?
You know, some of these things do get personal, you know.
I can't dispute that. When we start talking about the Speaker of the House next, I'm definitely thinking that it's a personal agenda on display. So I can't discount that. On the other hand, it seems to me he's right. They were over-optimistic. The economy, and the president has never claimed otherwise, is improving but not greatly improved. Mm-hmm. Why does it have to happen this month or next month or the month after?
Well, the real question
still seems prudent to me to continue the current course. Mm.
The real question is how much stability, I mean instability, does buying all these bonds from ourselves cause in the long run?
Why? And why instability?
Well, even in the short term.
But in the end, is this a false way of proceeding? In other words, do you understand what I'm saying?
Well, like, it's sort of a smoke and mirrors, right?
Yeah. The whole stimulus is false. I mean, come on, that's what it is. It is an artificial injection, a device
You're
to get
the economy
that's not working normally. So, yeah, of course it's artificial.
So like it's a human being on the operating table and keeping him or her alive on life support?
Yeah, so we stop the life support because it's not his real heart beating. Don't get it, Alan. I don't get it. I think the Fed is acting exactly the way it ought to. And some people have also said that Wall Street just wasn't reading the same signs. Some people,
the Bank of America experts, they were scared to death was going to happen.
Yeah. The Bank of America experts said, no, I don't see this happening. Said it all along that the Fed's going to stay where it is because they have to look at the numbers. The Fed kept looking at data on unemployment and poverty rate and all the same numbers we've been talking about here endlessly.
And of course,
we are not there yet.
And a lot of people expected that this was going to happen, and therefore they, what we call, sold short.
Exactly.
Meaning that there was going to be and they got caught with their proverbial pants down.
Yes. That's why the stock market.
But a lot of people made money.
This is nice for the stock market.
We heard from analysts yesterday who warned that this announcement, which again was considered to be unexpected, was likely to foster even more confusion about the Fed's plans. And ultimately, increasing the volatility of the markets in the coming months as investors sort of sort through what they're going to do.
So let me ask all of you this, assuming that you all have some money in stocks, yes?
Yeah, like most Americans, like, yes.
TIA Craft?
We don't have any, we don't have any choice.
Okay, yeah. So you know, you have your pension and the rest of it, but you can move things around within some of that stuff. And what are you going to do? I mean, what are you going to do? Are you going to say, okay, well, then the next time they're going to do it, or the time after that they're going to do it, so I better take my money out of stocks and put it into bonds, or into something safe? And some people are doing that now.
I'll sound like my financial analyst here, but like individuals, the economy of the U.S. ought to do the same thing. You have a diversified portfolio that includes both, so
that's
that
what
you
they
ride
say.
Over this
right.
sort of.
That's the
you don't,
safe
you're
way
not out. Making these. Swings from one into the other, which hurt the economy.
And this is going to sound smart alecky, but
not at all.
But I don't mean it to be. But the advice that I would receive, that Ray would receive, even Rosemary would receive, which is probably different than the advice you would receive.
Because I'm a holding close to the end.
Well, because you're older. I mean, so what they'll tell us is you're in this for the long haul. You're in this for the long haul. You have a diversified portfolio. You're going to have dips in the road. There's going to be peaks, ebbs and flows. And so you just do what you need to do. You know, just stay where you are.
Yeah, yeah.
Stay the course.
Right.
And for someone who is looking to draw on that at some point closer, then, okay, they're going to tell you to be a lot more cautious they're going to tell us.
Oh, yeah, a lot more cautious.
A lot more cautious.
Yeah, sure. That's correct. Yeah, that's right.
That wasn't smart alecky.
Well, no, I didn't. Well,
although I had a few smart alecky remarks prepared.
He called his boss old.
You That's never know.
He didn't call his boss
you know,
old.
Lied it.
I mean, it's, you
he just
know,
said our journey is long. He's a little closer to the exit. That's all.
Basically, he said, you know,
we're in our 40s. You're in your 70s. So there's a little bit of a difference on the advice
man.
That we're going to receive. That's
I think
all.
It's a great time for a break soon. Eh?
Let's take a break.
Yeah.
It's not the same without bowls.
No, and we won't be doing bowls for a while, but thank you for bringing that up.
My mother said we sounded very silly yesterday.
We were
well,
silly.
You know, it comes with the arts and crafts.
My harshest critic.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Kern Compliance Services, LLC, Greenwich, New York. Legal and consulting services on regulatory issues for life insurance and annuity manufacturers and distributors. KernCompliance.com. Woodstock School of Art, presenting the Woodstock landscape then and now, featuring 56 paintings by artists from Woodstock's past and present through November 2nd. WoodstockSchoolOfArt.org. Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires. AshfieldStone.com. And Mark Lawson Antiques, Saratoga Springs and Colony, New York. Purchasing estate jewelry, coins, silver, fine arts, and collections. Sponsor of Antiques Roadshow. MarkLawson.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to our discussion on the Roundtable this morning. We welcome you to join in, and all you have to do is go to roundtable@wamc.org and just type in your thoughts, press the send button, and we will get them in a flash.
That's right.
We'd love to hear from you. Again, roundtable@wamc.org. As Rosemary alluded to a moment ago, we are going to talk about the budget as well as the economy this morning. After 3 years of cajoling, finessing, and occasionally strong-arming the conservative majority, Speaker John Boehner waved the white flag on Wednesday, surrendering to demands from his right flank that he tie money to keep the government open after September 30th to stripping President Obama's health care law of any financing. Stir, mix, and enjoy.
The Republicans, by the way, this is my personal opinion and certainly not that of the station. I never do that. But I just want to make that always clear. But I think Boehner, it's not quite spelled
all
that
right.
way.
Yeah.
But Boehner has gotten himself into a really bad fix. And so have all the Republicans in Congress. They have a choice. They can get into primaries with ultra-conservative people and lose. Or they can do the responsible thing and keep the government alive.
Yeah,
it's that simple.
Yeah.
And I think, I hate to say this because some of you aren't going to like it, I think Boehner is basically a decent fellow. And I think he knows, that he's got himself into a situation. But like everybody else, I think he wants to stay speaker.
Yeah.
I think he wants to do that. He's got a absolute revolution coming from his troops in his party conference, but in the long run, they are not doing themselves any good. They're hurting themselves.
Before we go on, and this is silly, but I just want to ask, because I agree with you on your assessment, I think that Boehner is probably at heart a decent guy. Cantor, though, the devil, right?
Did I say that?
Is that your personal opinion? I'm just asking.
I'm not a big fan of Cantor.
Okay, yeah.
I had a run-in
with him in the halls of the House. And
did
you? I never sort of got over
it. Well, what happened?
Well, he was a jerk.
Well, what did he do?
Well, he sort of, you know, get out of the way. And then there were people talking to him, and he said basically that, you know, I have more important things to do than do these issues and talk to the people.
Well, that'll do it for the rest of your life. I don't mind doing that. I don't mind people talking about me, but I hate it when they make things up.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the thing. I think Boehner also is a decent guy. He has consistently tried to work with the White House and to get the government moving and to go for the big deal on the economy that this country is really ready for. He has been thwarted several times, repeatedly, by Cantor, who is the devil, I'll say it, and by Republicans who are not looking for the good of the country. They're looking for the good of their idea.
And yesterday,
but his legacy, Joe, is that he wants to be speaker. So he sold out. I mean, something in me, he's a weakling, and that will be how he's remembered. I lost a lot of respect for him. A decent man, I like to think I am a journalist and so therefore love the dramatic. I would like to have seen him say it's not right and go against it, even if he was voted out as speaker.
Well, none of them want to do that. That's
yeah,
what
he
it's
wants
like
to stay
to
in
a,
power. So
that's
great,
what it's
that's
like
what
to
he
be
did.
A career politician.
Yeah.
And that's who these guys
but
are.
But in the end, he knows it has no chance of passing through Harry Reid's filter. So he's just...
Well, here's what their problem is. They know they're going to be held responsible, as Newt Gingrich was, for trying to bring down the government and hold down the government. They know that. So they think they're being clever here and saying, okay, we'll allow this to go forward. We'll make a deal. But first, you have to kill Obamacare. You have to kill your kid.
Yeah.
And Obama's not going to do that. And I think the American people are going to understand that. So let me ask each of you. By the way, at home, I'm now getting telephone calls, robocalls, about how terrible Obamacare is.
Yeah, me too.
Yes, me
yeah.
too.
So they're spending a lot of money on this thing.
I just don't understand. You know, we passed it. We reelected the president who pushed for it.
The point he made.
And went through the Supreme Court.
It went through the Supreme Court. It went through a conservative Supreme Court. It passed that test. I mean, at what point do we stop fighting this?
So the real question to me is, what are we going to do? What is no, forget about the pronouns. What is Obama? What is Obama going to do? Confronted with this, he's going to stay right with it. He's going to say, "You want to bring down the government? Go ahead." And let's see what people have to say about
it. I agree. I think he's using history as a guide and thinks that can only help him. He's going to play politics here, too. On the other hand, I'm not sure what else he can do. Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, House Republicans would not even negotiate with their own leadership. So there's no hope that I can see or that Obama should be able to see that he will succeed there.
Well, I got to tell you, I have faith in some Republicans. I have faith that a guy like Chris Gibson here in Columbia County will do what's right. He will not vote to hamstring the government.
Doesn't matter. They have 80 votes.
Yeah, no.
They have 80 votes. So the Chris Gibsons of the world, just like all of the good people of the country who have voted and shown to be thinking a different way, they don't matter.
Look, not everybody is going to face a primary. There'll be a lot of primaries, but not everybody will. And the way that people like Boehner get along as leaders is they count votes. And if they've got enough votes between the Democrats and the Republicans, and they can say to somebody who's got a primary, okay, you're off the hook. But they say to somebody else who doesn't have a primary, listen, you got to do this one for the Gipper.
In March, Boehner said, do you want to risk the full faith and credit of the U.S. government over Obamacare? That's a very tough argument to make. Yesterday, he said, quote, the law's a train wreck. It's time to protect American families from this unworkable law.
You're just repeating, Joe, what we've said is he's definitely turned his back on his own ideas, on the way he really thinks. This is a pure power play. He wants to stay and go.
Right.
Office.
Ultimately, it's a show because it will never get through the Senate. So it doesn't really matter what he says. He's exactly what Rosemary says, just trying to keep in business, his own personal business.
What's more? Let's take it one step further. Suppose Obama said, for the sake of the country, we'll give up my prime piece of legislation of all time. What would history say about Obama?
Yeah.
It would be terrible. He does not have a choice here.
Right.
And so many media outlets, and I saw this last night on all of the talk shows, about this being a defining moment for Boehner. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. We're going to take a break. We can discuss more.
Well, it would be refreshing if politicians stopped worrying about what history will say and start worrying about doing their jobs.
And on that very uplifting note, we are going to take a break and a little bit of an admonishment from Mr. Graff. We're going to break a bake. Take a quick break. We'll be right back after this short. Miami Vice.
Yeah, I like that. It's ethereal bumper music for Mr. Hopper.
Very nice. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. It is a delight to have you with us. Roundtable at WAMC.org if you would like to take part in the conversation. Rosemary Arameo is with us. Ray Graff is here. And Alan is here as well. Good morning, all. And
hang on, he's checking his spam.
No, I'm not. I'm writing to our terrific webmaster, Tony Yang.
Oh, our IT
guy.
Our server.
And to tell him to get rid of all of these ads about enlargements.
I see.
Yes, not photo, by the way.
Right.
We're getting a ton of this stuff.
See, we don't get it. You got only you and only you and Alan get.
That's
it.
Not true.
Do you think
that's
it's
not true? Everyone
I think
in
we need
room.
More women on the show.
I agree.
What, you wouldn't talk about this?
No.
But see, okay, can I ask you a
question? This is supposed to be a serious discussion.
Can I ask you? Okay.
Oh, just because your mother yelled at you because we had too much fun last
you
night.
You were too silly yesterday,
Smackdown.
Yes.
Hi, Mom.
Let me make it a serious discussion. Do you find it, if you are an employee, I don't care if you're male or female, and you get that stuff in your email, do you find that a form of harassment?
No, I just zap it out. It's a form of, I want the internet to be free, and that's one of the prices you pay for it.
Well, no, we got to have spam that will cut.
But
that
but
out.
If you have a spam filter and you have that possibility,
right,
instead of not getting that stuff,
no, I
okay.
do have the spam filter.
But, right, and I'm saying if you get this stuff and it's unsolicited and it's offensive, then
I sort
you want to get rid
in,
of it.
I sort of am intrigued at the ingenuity that the spammers go to get our attention. It's rather clever.
It is
clever.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not. I don't like it. I resent it. I hate them.
Well, okay. I agree with you on that. However, I do agree with Rosemary that how they get it and how they get in, as it were, is really quite incredible.
You have to watch those links. If you see the one-stop lanyard shop, don't click the link because this is part.
No, I'm
partly
not talking about clicking
but
the link. But
they'll put your name.
Actually,
they'll say, "Hey, Rosemary," you know, and they'll name somebody I worked with 10 years ago wants to talk to you.
But
and it's like, wow, I haven't heard from them. You click on it, and bam.
But here's the thing.
Bam.
I mean, this
nice
is
even click on it. I'm talking about just going through your email.
But the New York Times, you know, was hacked, and we had Tony on the show soon after that, and you know, one of the ways in which they get some of this information is through these phony links. So be very careful, you know, at home or at the office. Be sure you know what you're clicking.
You know, Dave Gallantly once told me something, and then we really have to get to work, I'm sure. But he
this
once told
work.
Me, well, I understand, but he told me, you know, they always have that thing at the bottom that says, if you want off this list,
right,
click here. He said, never click that.
Oh, yeah.
Because that in itself
tells them you are there.
Acknowledgement.
You're
yeah.
there.
Yeah. We've read to the end.
We've been talking a lot about the economy. We've been talking a lot about politics in Washington. President Obama on Monday seized on the fifth anniversary of the 2008 financial collapse to warn that House Republicans would reverse the gains made and willfully cause economic chaos with the uncompromising stands that they have staked after out on looming budget deadlines and budget debates. Did I go to the wrong story? I think I went to the wrong story.
That's fine.
I apologize.
All right.
I went to the wrong thing.
Rosemary's going to yell at you again.
I know. She is going to. She's going to be furious with me.
A woman wouldn't make that mistake, you male chauvinist pig.
It's true. Women are more organized.
Okay. Thank you. Here's the window I was looking for.
Oh, Ray. That was
just trying
nice.
To stir it up here. Sorry, Mom.
Let us talk about the Washington Navy Yard shooting. Capitol Police are to review the response. This is a BBC report. A tactical response team from the force was told by a supervisor to leave the scene instead of aiding municipal officers. That, according to a report from police sources telling the BBC this, right. The Capitol Police sources suggest that they could have saved lives had they been allowed to go in. Aaron Alexis, 34, killed 12 people at the Washington Navy Yard earlier this week. In a statement on Wednesday, U.S. Capitol Police Board said the force's chief, Kim Dine, had asked it to conduct a comprehensive independent review of the facts surrounding the Capitol Police's response to the Navy Yard shootings. The Capitol Police Board said it had responded by establishing a fact review team led by Michael Stenger, a former assistant director of the U.S. Secret Service.
This is one of a number of reviews that are coming out of the shooting, the handling of the shooting. We have the Department of Defense is looking at its method of clearing people. Why did that shooter get on the base so easily in the first place with a really spotty history? And now we have the actions of the Capitol Police team. This is a team of men who are sharpshooters. They have long rifles. They responded. Apparently, the BBC is reporting, using unnamed sources, of course, because they're afraid of getting into trouble, that they responded and thought they could do something, wanted to help, and they were told, no, get back to your post.
Yeah,
the
within
Capitol.
Minutes of
they
the
were told
call.
To stand down. Yep.
And I'm glad that they're reviewing it. My one question that would tend to excuse what they did is, was there thought that there'd be a threat in Congress as well? Their main duty is to protect the Capitol. There have been shootings at the Capitol. Was there some thinking that they needed to protect their primary site? I don't know.
It was interesting because they locked down, I don't know if they locked down the Senate, but they locked down the House hours later.
Yeah.
It was like 3 or 4 hours later that we've locked it down. Oh, well, I'm glad you got around to that if you really thought it was important.
That's one way to end the budget impasse.
Keep them in? Just, lock them in?
No, just leave it open so shooters can get in.
Oh, my gosh. Now
that's what I thought you were implying.
I see. You were just having,
I thought that's what he was implying.
How would I be implying that? Attention, my attorney. How would I be implying that?
Better yet, attention, Rosemary's
attorney. Well, yeah, why did it take them hours to lock down
the
house?
That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
And, you know, but you make a point about them defending the Capitol, but it was weird on that day that they did lock down one of the houses, and it took
hours. Yeah. Like almost a political
afraid
decision.
To say anything.
Yeah, I don't know. Talk about being on a list. Holy mackerel. It's Rosemary Armeo.
And I guess, you know, I'm fascinated. I don't know if you all got into this. I'm sure you did in the media project this week, but which just taped and will obviously be on over the weekend. But I've been fascinated. We talked about this during the Boston tragedy, where news crews, you know, weeks later were still on the corner doing the so yesterday I'm watching CNN and they're still on the corner, you know, they're still outside the Navy Yard, and I'm wondering, you know, at what point do we let these investigations take hold and get the media out of there to actually do something, as opposed to just kind of spinning their wheels and regurgitating what we already have.
Okay, so you're the new news director, the new news director at CNN. And you're making judgments about what will get eyeballs to watch the network. And you know that if you have somebody still standing outside, it's better than if you have somebody
sitting
in the room. You're going to do it. So it's quite right for you to raise the issue in terms of the overall good
except
of the country.
Except that you're not doing the news. You're not adding anything to the equation. You're speculating. You're regurgitating. And if the audience wants to find out what is happening that day, not what happened on Monday, and see the same footage over and over and over again, it would seem to me that they would want to go somewhere else.
So I suspect, but I can't tell you because I'm not there, that they are polling. You know, they're polling. They're finding out what gets them more eyeballs. And if more eyeballs...
Well, they get overnight ratings.
Yeah, they can find out.
Is it the background that is bothering you, or that they're still on the story a few days later? Because
no,
I'm kind of struck
that,
by...
The fact that they're on the story doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah,
the
I'm actually struck by how much new news came out of this yesterday. Mm. First, there's a lot of stuff we didn't know because they were locked down for the whole day that it was happening. So the backgrounds of the victims, some of the motivations and background of the shooter is coming out. All the investigations and behavior of the Capitol Police. This is all new information. So the background of where they're telling me this, why do I care about that? Whether it's a room or the shipyard in the background.
It seems to me because it still looks like an active crime scene. And it is. I know, but what I'm saying is that to me, normally you would have a situation where when it's going on, you'll come in, you'll do your thing, and then you'll leave. And then I don't know. I don't know what's right. I'm just asking the question because I don't know. Do we leave too soon sometimes?
Do you think it's crass that they're still there when nothing's happening on the street corner?
It's because the coverage that I watched yesterday was an hour. This is CNN. An hour and a half of them basically reading tweets of what people have said regarding, which I think is...
I hate that.
I don't like it anyway.
You guys may hate it, but it is where it's at. I hope everybody listens to the media project because we discussed that very issue this week. If you're an established news organization, how do you capture the social media market? How do you do that? And because we know that on social media, somebody's going to come up with something that nobody heard before. So I'm told by Rex and others and Ira that there's city editors who are looking all day long at their tweet deck to see that this happens, because that's where I think something an incredible number of people are now getting most, if not all, of their news, as I do, from their cell phone.
Well, that's fine, but what Joe is talking about is a news show that is using as its news what it's getting from its readers. We read our readers' notes here. But that's not the same as covering a story.
No, but I'm telling you, it is not about responsible journalism. What it's about is marketing, advertising, how many people will buy your airtime because you have 0.02% more people listening to you than Fox or less, or, you know, where you're going. When they hired the new guy at CNN, basically they hired him to get more eyeballs. That's why they did it. Mm-hmm. It really, we can sit here and piously, and you're, you know, a pious professor yourself, Rosemary.
That's not an adjective I would use.
Well, I mean pious in the sense that, you know, Rex is always talking about the five principles of journalism, you know, 1, 2, 3, don't do this, don't harm anybody, be transparent, do this, do that. But this is
first,
not,
do no
but,
harm.
This is not the way it works. This is not what this is about. Right?
Okay, so we moved. I have to say I'm less offended. I'm stopped this character assassination.
Yes.
I'm serious.
Yeah, right.
I'm less offended or upset by what you pointed out, Joe, that they're still standing there in that old set. This is more disturbing that, you know, it, for marketing sake, we're diluting maybe our actual news.
But I think they're together. Same reason that they're out there is for marketing. I mean, how many times have we seen in the local news when they're talking about a meeting at the 11 o'clock newscast, mm-hmm. the meeting took place at 6, the building is boarded up, the lights are off, there's not a car in the parking lot, and there is
the
local
state
reporter. Right, and there is the reporter talking about what happened at that spot. Does that serve any purpose? Okay, no, but you're there, it shows that you were on the scene, I get that.
I like in weather stores where they stand in their raincoats with the wind blowing.
That makes sense to me, and obviously when it's going on and you're seeing and you see the helicopters going over, Jon Stewart did a brilliant piece on The Daily Show on Tuesday about CNN and the mistakes that they made and that they were basically just pointing out stuff. Look, there's a chopper, there's a garbage truck,
and it was like that. I mean, we watched it for hours and there was not much change in what they knew for hours at a time. And not just CNN, by the way.
Well, and that's my point now, as the story has moved on, there are still people in the hospital. There's still, and as Rosemary rightfully points out, there's still news coming out of it.
There's definitely new news coming out of it.
But instead of working that beat, we seem to be on the streets for the sake of being on the streets and reading stuff that is taking place.
And the BBC actually broke the big story about how the Capitol SWAT team performed.
Hey, so. go to the Today Show or one of those programs and look at the women, how they're decked out, how short the skirts are. How, you know, as a feminist, Rosemary, I would be very offended by that.
And Katie Couric, who did a lot of that, she's a well-known newscaster. She now has spoken out about, you know, maybe the dresses were too short, the heels a little too high. Yeah, she realizes there's been way more focus on her legs and on her kind of vast interviewing skills.
But isn't that, I mean, that's the same thing basically like we're talking about Banner. If you do what you have to do to keep your job, right?
Yeah.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right. But there's never going to be equality between men and women when we stake out women on the Today Show and say, okay, you have to have these little things on, these little skinny mini skirts and the rest of it. You get the guy, the Chris Cuomo's and the others. And then you get, you know, women who are objectified that way. Mm-hmm. It's not right.
Mm-hmm. There's a great documentary called Misrepresentation, which I show in class and I've watched a number of times, and it's quite appalling on the way the media treats its own women. And then you look at female politicians, and no matter what side of the spectrum you're on, Sarah Palin or Hillary Clinton, they are just so objectified and so berated by newscasters.
What has that woman done with her hair?
Yeah. Whether you're really pretty like Sarah Palin or, you know, known more for your brain than your looks like Hillary, you still get that same treatment.
Sure.
Looking at their legs, looking at their shoes. It's
what
crazy.
What they wore in the news articles.
Yeah.
I'm always amazed because I always ask the question in my class of who's your favorite broadcaster?
Mm-hmm.
Who's your favorite broadcaster? And the men in the class usually never have an answer. And the women, if they do have an answer, almost always say Anderson Cooper. And you ask them why, and they say because he's cute.
Well, that's why we voted for John Kennedy, too. You know, humans look at other humans, and they are more attracted to and approving of the good-looking ones.
You know, I have an alternative theory, which a lot of people are going to argue with, about women, which is that some of the older women, people like Indira Gandhi, Golda Meir,
Margaret Thatcher,
in their post sort of, what's the right word here?
Menopausal.
Time are more like seen by people as more having men.
They have more gravitas.
More men values, mm-hmm. in quotes. There are exceptions, of course. Mm-hmm. But we've got to get beyond that.
We're going to take a quick break. We're ready for a break, right?
Yeah.
I'm ready to take a break.
I'm asking Hopper. But yeah, we're supposed to take a break. Great. Let's take a break. I didn't know if we had already taken one. We'll take a break. We'll be back and finish up. We love to hear from you. Roundtable@WAMC.org.
Support for WAMC comes from Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington. Featuring autumn decor, gourds, pumpkins, cornstalks, mums, cabbage, and kale, wardsnursery.com. Paradise Copies, Northampton, Massachusetts, providing printing design for customers for over 20 years. From digital to offset, color copies, scans, logos, and more, ParadiseCopies.com. And Mr. Reuter Plumbing, working to fix slow-draining sinks, laundry lines, repairing and replacing kitchen and bathroom faucets, high-efficiency water heaters, septic systems, and more, thehudsonvalley.mrreuter.com. And Albany Medical Center's surgical team, offering advanced surgical techniques and technology, amc.edu.
There was welcome back to our roundtable panel. The article I was trying to find a moment ago that I was sort of kind of fumbling around for, I actually had found, but I didn't realize it was the article I was looking for.
Okay.
Because we were talking about the economy. I found this article in the Los Angeles Times, and it was in their science section. I found it to be fascinating that the global economic crisis that has come to be known as the Great Recession appears to have fueled an increase in suicides, including an estimated 5,000 additional deaths in 2009, a new study reports.
Mm.
Although previous research has linked the recession to higher suicide rates in various countries, no studies have tried to measure these effects on a global scale. So researchers at the University of Hong Kong and other institutions examined suicide trends in 54 countries around the world using data on unemployment, gross domestic product, and suicide deaths from the World Health Organization and the International Monetary Fund, as well as the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Their analysis revealed an association between unemployment and suicide rates, which was especially strong for men in countries that used to have low unemployment.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. In 2009 alone, 37% higher unemployment seems to have fueled a nearly 4% increase in the global suicide rate for men, according to the study.
Joe, weren't we talking about this just the other day, in which we said that men between something like 46 and 60 are the most likely to suicide?
And 45 and 64.
45 and 64, which makes sense. I mean, we are inculcated with values about taking care of our families and doing all of this, and we can't do it. And there's always that. We heard a spate of stories after the Great Depression that people were jumping out of windows. Turns out that they weren't. But there were all of the cartoons and everything about people in top hats jumping out of windows. You know, I have no intention of doing that.
I know.
Well, you're on the ground floor. I mean, clearly you're fine, right?
Suicide is pretty interesting phenomena that I wish the press spent more time on. This study's a little bit weird, too, if you look at the numbers real closely. And other studies have shown
especially
that
especially the ages, 15 to 24.
Yeah,
I mean,
Who's working at 15? You get so depressed, you don't have a job.
Well, maybe not in this country.
Yeah, like I lost my paper.
This is one where we traditionally have had a low unemployment rate and consistent. So according to the way that the study is described, we should be affected there. And then there have been other studies that have linked suicide to loss of young people taking care of you, for example, in Japan. It's change that seems to be behind a lot of this.
Are you leaving?
I'm leaving.
Oh.
Okay.
So long.
Well, goodbye.
He's leaving on a jet plane. Well, nice
I'm leaving because I have to get my hair cut, and I have to have many meetings here today, and I must be at all of them.
Excellent.
Hello, well, I must be going.
Well, thank you very much. You're excused.
Thank you.
Thank you
ladies
very
and gentlemen,
much.
Gentlemen, Alan Chartok.
I didn't
know. Gentlemen, Alan Chartok. He'll be here all week.
It's not applauding.
Something, I'm shaking my head.
Something new every day on the round table.
I think it's...
I've got to go.
I think it's funny because you started... Is it something you said?
I don't know.
All of a sudden,
it's indeed something Rosemary said.
All right.
Figure out what it was.
And I'm not taking it anymore. Not true.
All right. goodbye, Alan. We love hearing from you, roundtable at WMC.org. I didn't know it was that easy.
Yeah.
You just get up and leave, apparently.
I would have done that a long time ago. I didn't know.
Did you know that was an option?
No.
Yeah.
No.
907. I got a haircut.
You're listening to the roundtable at WMC.